Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Yep, yep, yep. All right. You are now listening to the Thanks for Trying podcast, season 2, episode 9, hosted by myself, Corin, also known as The Last Skeptic. Thank you to everyone listening so far, all the way to episode 9. There's only one more episode to go after this. I hope you're getting all seasonal as fuck, as this will be dropping about a week before Christmas. Fuck. I haven't got any presents yet, as of the recording of this. I hope you're as worried about it as I am. Shit. My special guests on this episode are two good friends of mine. Rapper Shay D, who I went to school with. Secondary school, we sat in geography class together. And she is an incredible rapper and poet. Activist, speaker, human being. And my second guest is Deborah Stevenson, aka Debris, who just was nominated for an Evening Standard Award for her performance in her play Poet in the Corner, based on Dizzy Rascal's seminal grime album Boy in the Corner. Big thank you to Raker Vodka for providing the booze, pretty much just for me to get absolutely wasted. Enjoy the episode. See you on the other side. One. All right, excellent. So we're gonna go straight in, because obviously we've already started, and there's so many things you've just dabbled on, touched on. The I said no, I don't want to talk about this yet. There is a time and a place, and that place is right now on the Thanks for Trying podcast, episode 9 of season 2. Oh my god, I can't believe the season's nearly over, and I'm very, very, very lucky to have two old friends of mine who I know separately and yet know each other. And this is a really lucky, lovely experience for me. So Shay, Deborah Stevenson, Debris.
Jeez.
Welcome.
Everyone missed the really intense moment where you looked me in the eyes because you said both versions of my name.
I did. You know what? Because what do you prefer now? Because I always used to go, oh, that's Debris.
You know what I mean? You said Debris.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's like
some people say Debris.
Debris.
Yeah.
Isn't that, that's a Jewish ceremony, right? It is, right?
Wow.
I don't know. I'm technically Jewish. So.
Okay, cool. It's the bris is where the circumcision ceremony.
What?
Yeah, the bris.
Anyway. I would just like to verify that my name has no relation to the circumcision ceremony.
Imagine that's what you're named after. Like,
imagine,
what?
Imagine.
Topic one.
Okay, cool. That's all of my questions done. So I guess everyone can go home now.
Call me Debris. My friends tell me to call me Deborah, but Debris is my artistic name.
Okay. And so I want to go straight in because, you know, this podcast, I never plan anything, but I do have talking points. Mm-hmm. And most of those talking points exist purely so that I can get things out of the way before I'm too drunk, and then I forget to ask the important questions. Fantastic. And then I start going on a rant about some kind of film that I've seen or whatever, and then it all goes a bit haywire. So what I want to talk about is the incredible inspirational play that I saw of yours very recently, Poe in the Corner. For the people that didn't get a chance, because they, you know, they're idiots, they missed out, or maybe they just lived in a different country, that's fine too. For the people that didn't, just give them the little bit of blurb about the play at the Royal Court that just happened.
So it was a grime poetry show, now been dubbed a grime musical, as there was grime poetry and dance within it, about me finding salvation from being raised in a strict Mormon home, coming out as pansexual, being bullied at school, and sort of really, you know, religion was everything to my parents. And when I had to move away from that because of how suffocating it was, I was homeless in a sense. And Grime, mainly through Dizzy Rascal and his first album, Boy in the Corner, being my salvation, being sort of a new home, a new way of understanding the world, and becoming a tool set for me knowing about myself. Yeah. And then also just trying to celebrate the, you know, me going to university, studying creative writing, studying poetry because of Grime. But actually Grime, though people, a lot of people think it's cool, I don't think enough people recognize and celebrate the literary accolade that it is, you know, a writing form that came with, came from no resources other than people's tenacity and passion and skill and inspired a whole generation of people to dedicate their life to words and entrepreneurship. And I think the way that it's represented in the media is reductive and too often either just cool and hip or whatever people want it to be, or associate with violence, you know. And so I wanted to say, look, this is this amazing thing. It changed my life.
Yep.
And it should be on a place that celebrates the best writing in the world, because that's what Grime is.
Yeah. And it came all from your brain. Which is, I always find something so incredible, because I do that with albums. I might do that, you know, Shay does that with records too. I don't know, did you ever take a moment, because when I went to see it, that it's huge.
Yeah.
It's not a small production. It's not something, you saw it as well, Shay, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not a small thing. There's huge props. There's a giant audience. There's like lights and moving parts to the stage, you know. It is essentially what, you know, I don't know the name of it, but it's a giant Lazy Susan in the middle that gets moved around.
It's called the Revolve. But from now on, we'll be called the Giant Lazy Susan. Come on, Susan. Get your act together, Susan.
See, I think in food terms, you know, like there's a Lazy Susan in the middle of the tables.
I think that's a really accessible way to talk about a revolve. If I'd said a revolve, people might not have known what I was talking about.
You know what I mean? So how exciting is that for you then to look on this stage when you're about to perform and see something, see this thing that's come out of your head fully realized? You know, it must be such an emotional experience.
Yeah, it was really mad, because so I've been working on the show for 4 years, and because there was a lot of processes, because half of the tracks in the show are based on Dizzy Rascal's tracks from Boy in the Corner. And even so, I took all of the tracks in the album through an academic process of analysing every single syllable and every single line, and saying what flows, which in academic terms you call metric patterns, you know, what are the inflections of the languages, what are the patterns that keep reoccurring. And I did that with every single song. It took about a month to do each song, you know. And in draft one, which was I think 78 pages long, and I collaborated with a different producer near enough and MC on each one, and that's how we met, was working together on that version of the project.
Yeah.
You know, so it's come so far. And, you know, you've also got, I've had pretty much, I've had therapy through the whole thing, because obviously it's to do with my family so strongly and so much of my life. So there's that component of it. There's, you know, this is really my debut as a dancer. I've never done choreography before, let alone on stage in that. So there's all these different things, you know. And also the fact that, and the whole creative team pretty much, we're the same generation. We're all from London. And we all had this sense of, we're not just representing ourselves, we're representing Grime.
Yeah.
And if we do a disservice with the show, we're not just doing a disservice to my life, my idea, we're doing a disservice to the community. So many people are going to come to this and be wanting to be patronizing, or for wanting it to be crap. And you know what? I'm not even talking about the reviewers. I'm talking about the people who lived through Grime like I did and want it to feel like home. Yeah. I don't want them to feel like we did a disservice, like them to feel like, no, Grime doesn't sound like that. No, stuff like that didn't happen. No, it didn't feel like that. It was so scary, you know. That was the scariest thing, is for people to come and just feel like, what's this?
But you didn't do it in a patronizing way.
And no, but some people are like that. It's like some people want to go and see something, but they are just waiting for it to either fail or do one little thing where they can turn around and be like, nah, that wasn't authentic, who's this? But the thing is with Debris's show, it kind of reminded me a little bit of like, your show is 100% better than 8 Mile, just saying before I say this. But you remember when in 8 Mile, Eminem cussed himself in the battle and that just ruined it for the other guy because there was nothing left to do. Mm. Debris, like, you touched on everything anyone could have said by being like, you know, you're a white girl in this scene, or you don't come from this.
There's
like,
so much, like, about the identity politics.
So much about the identity that you overstood and had already said.
When you go take it on and it's on like Broadway, that I don't want to ruin it for
it
everybody.
It will be back next year.
I'm so glad to hear that.
Me and the Royal Court, we're talking about when it will be back.
Amazing.
That's fantastic. That is brilliant. And so the other thing that happened is that Dizzy came to watch the show. I've been dying to like talk to you about this.
So because it's called Poet in the Corner, and because of the rhyme patterns that we use throughout, I was never trying to covertly steal. I was trying to archive.
Yeah.
I was trying to say, just like in literature, you say, this is a Shakespearean sonnet. This is how Shakespeare works. You say, this is, stop that, in Boy in the Corner. These are the rhyme patterns he used. And these have been repeated in many songs ever since. He founded this. It's been influenced by these dub patterns and drum and bass and jungle. And talking about, you know, the music that has, you know, there was a whole, we didn't have the time. We only had 3 weeks rehearsal for the show, which is short for just a normal play that has already been written, let alone.
You've got, like 300 times the amount of words than a normal play.
We did all the music in that time. We did all the choreography in that time. It was insane. So there was a whole section where I wanted to show the lineage of grime from sound system culture and from the Caribbean, where we did like loads of mixing and you saw the different, how it evolved from those things, but we never had time to make that and stuff like that. But so we were always talking to Dizzy's manager, Nick Cage, and we went to see him and stuff. But Dizzy had always been kept kind of quite exclusive from us, which is understandable because until you know it's good, you don't necessarily want to take up his time. But he needed to sign everything off and it made quite a lot of things take a lot of time. Like even the font that's on it, that's the actual font which Dizzy owns. That's trademarked, that font.
That's clever.
So so for a long time, the name of the show wasn't released because we had to be prepared not to be able to use it. I had to always be prepared to edit the whole play to no longer retain his rhyme schemes and flow patterns. Because I mean, at the end of the day, it could have just been a show about grime and be about my story. But you know, the seed was always Boy in the Corner and we all wanted that. And I was just kind of resigned to the fact that he wasn't going to see it. Everyone was like, you've made a show about him, of course he's got to come. And I'm like, man, this guy's got a lot going on. I'm sure I'm small stuff in the scale of things. And then they just came up one day in the middle of the run after all the reviews had come out. I'm assuming that was a prompt. And they said, yeah, he's going to come see it
and
tomorrow.
And I think maybe all the undercover tweets.
Everyone. A lot of people. Like,
everyone.
Listen, if you hadn't added Dizzy to say go see the show, you were slipping.
The Evening Standard did an interview with me and actually put out a little column that said, I want Dizzy to see this. So there's actually a whole section in the Evening Standard next to the 5-star review. So it's pretty much a whole page of the Evening Standard basically saying, Dizzy, come fucking see this.
Well, he looked gassed.
He
looked so excited.
Listen, so I couldn't, they told me where he was sitting, I just couldn't look there. I just couldn't look there.
Oh, the pressure.
I would have wanted to know that he was coming.
So when they said, we've got a surprise for you, I thought he'd already seen it. I was hoping they just hadn't told me. But no, to be honest, it was really amazing knowing he was there because I always say, and I'm not going to, no spoilers, but the play is like 2-for-1. It's a bog off play. There are more than one plays in the play, right? And, you know, and really there's a story about grime and Dizzy, and there's a story about my family as well. You know, that's sort of two strands that go on. And when Dizzy was in the audience, it all, that story of grime, that story about him, I almost, at one point, I thought I'd got the order of the play wrong. Because I just kind of forgot all the other bits. I was actually just really worried he wasn't going to like it. But then he came backstage.
How can you not?
But it's very, it's about your life. Do you know what I mean? You could feel misrepresented. You could, and he has not liked things that people have done supposedly in honour of him before. So
whack things. Things that ain't as good as this.
He was like, my manager told me spoken word and theatre, but it wasn't boring.
I love that.
Which I thought was like the best sentence ever. And then he was just saying, he was saying it was so true. It reminded him of things that he'd forgotten about his life. And then he went on stage with he had like 1% battery on his phone and quickly took a video of us all on stage with him. He crouched in the corner with me and did the horns. He said he's never done that since the actual album cover shoot. He instigated the move.
Man. All I can say is that I don't want to go into it too much because if it's going to come back, I don't want to give anybody spoilers. Just make sure you go see it in the Royal Court. Mm. Whether you're listening to it now when this episode comes out, which is the week before Christmas, Merry Christmas, everybody. Or if you're listening to it sometime in the future. But we're going to come back to that in a second, just to, you know, even the conversational playing field. Shay D, someone I've known for a very, very, very long time. Like so
really
long, in
long
fact,
time.
That it's mad. It's scary.
It is scary.
I knew you before I had facial hair. That's it. That's saying something. So you obviously have had quite a transition as an artist, which is beautiful to watch. I first knew you as a poet, I guess, coming out as a poet, and you've killed it with your night that you've put on, Word on the Street, and performing everywhere doing that. Mm. And as an MC, also incorporating your poetry within your MCing, because it's all hand in hand anyway. Yeah. You've just released your debut album, Human Rights, right? Yeah. And so, which is sick. I was late on it. I didn't give it a good listen until the other day, till I actually got to sit down and listen to it. But amazing. It is fucking amazing. And I wrote down, Don't Worry is big letters. Don't Worry is my favorite.
It's deep, okay. Isn't that? It's like literally one of my favorites.
It's
like
beautiful.
It's a really personal one as well.
It's so personal, and you're talking about your books, and like, I don't know. Please,
you're
please.
You're like, that's
go
how I know Shay from school. Exactly.
I just remember being in geography class. That's my best memory of you sitting next to you because I was so into volcanoes.
Our school was like obsessed with like glaciers and volcanoes. Like, why do we know so much about them?
Why do we know? Okay, so that's all my nonsense preamble, but I wanted to talk to you. So this debut album, what made you as a human being kind of come out and do this record? Like, why was it so important to you?
So it's not my debut.
It's not?
No.
Okay.
It's my second one. Right. But because of the way I've put it out, it feels like the debut. Okay. It's weird that you said that because I feel that energy with this one for some reason.
It feels like you've arrived.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Kind of, yeah.
And that's I've done the same thing. I've had records that came out, a record came out last year, felt like my debut.
Yeah, I went in with it differently. Maybe it's just from the experience from putting out the last one and then really thinking about how I want to put this one out. But it's had such a beautiful response. Like I've received loads of amazing messages and I've never like done the whole, you know, I guess like official way of doing stuff. So like the fact that it's charted or it's like playlisted or it's been more on like some mainstream radio stations, for example. And it's been really nice. Like, and I think without like my little fan base that kind of go in for me, like it wouldn't have really happened like that. But also, I think I'm a little bit more brave with just reaching out or asking.
Yeah.
And I just don't like disturbing people or...
Also,
like,
you never want to be a beg. Like, that's my thing. That stops me.
I just don't want to be cringy, you know? I don't want to be that cringy artist that someone... I always imagine someone talking somewhere, like in a bar or something and going, do you know that shady girl? And going, oh God, yeah, she messages me this. And someone going, oh yeah, shit. And I'm like, oh my God, I don't want that to happen. So like, I'm just like, you know what? Just don't ask for anything. Just do it. And then hopefully it will come.
All have those people in our
head, those paranoid thoughts.
All the paranoid thoughts,
and it's so weird because I'm not even like that with like loads of artists and poets and you know, young people. Like, so many like people message me and ask for things and I never think that. It's weird because you go, I don't know if you're like this as well or yourself, but like, you know, you go through the kind of creative bit and then you make the product or whatever, you know, you make what you're making, and then for me it's you go into like promo and plugging.
It's a different side of your brain.
And I can't even think about creating now. Yeah. I can't. So some people sent me some beats and I got gas. I got like a really dope beat I want to do. And I'm like, I can't. I'm in like promo. I need to now think about touring or performing.
The way
like,
I describe it is you can't get pregnant while you're still pregnant.
Oh my God, that's so sick. That's a really good way.
You've got to have the baby, let the baby like grow a little bit.
Yeah.
And then get pregnant again.
Yeah.
That's really nice.
Well. Yeah.
Our biology teacher was really good as well.
I'm going to send you a little message one day and be like, I'm pregnant.
while I'm pregnant.
Oh yeah, but God. That's it.
You wouldn't be the first. Merry Christmas, everybody. I promise I'll pay child support.
Oh, that's so fine.
I also think that as like we're whole businesses. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? As artists, like so often we are all parts of the business, and that's why I'm always like, have you got contingency, you?
Yeah.
That's the thing that I'm trying to work out how to do, is to have a little reservation of me so I'm not, so I can promote all day, but then have enough time in the week to like recede into my little cocoon of creativity.
Yeah, that's the thing that both of you have said to me separately. One of you said to me today, but on different occasions. Not I'm pregnant, but no, the whole that as soon as you do something, you said it to me earlier. As soon as you do something, everyone's like, "Hey, so what? Oh, what's next?"
Yeah, I get that. I say it in a line in one of my tracks.
Yeah,
I say, I can't remember the line before right now, but something, and people asking when the next project will drop. Mm. I'm writing my raps on tubes. I'm writing on the train. I'm writing on the bus. I'm writing on my break. I'm writing, and I go into that because I'm just like, bro, like, did you even buy my last project, or have you even heard every song before you're asking me when the next thing is out?
Don't ask me what's next. This has happened.
Do you think it's a social media thing, you know, because there's like millions of hours of new content going up on Instagram, on social media every minute of every day.
Maybe.
People now, do you know, who watches a whole YouTube video? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Who, if you check out, even me, if I check out an artist, I might watch 30 seconds of a couple, but we don't ever necessarily see anything through. We're just waiting for the next stimulating thing.
I've stopped making music videos now. I'm not going to do them anymore.
Really? But yours are so great.
Yeah.
You're actually one of the... There's so many crap music videos.
Yeah.
All of you making crap music videos, you've stopped one of the few guys making good music videos.
That's them.
Fuck off and die.
You know what I mean? No, it's because no one watches them. Like I did, I spend my time doing amazing cinematic short films. No one fucking watches them. And then
I watched some of them. I've watched some.
Thank you. But at the same time, like, you know, I think I may as well just make a film.
Yeah.
So the next thing I'll do, I'll just make a film and then soundtrack it. There's no point me making, instead, making a music video that no one will see. I'd rather make a film that no one sees. No, that was the tangent. No, so Shay, you also did the video for Suffragettes.
Yes.
Tell me the background behind that song.
Wanted to definitely do a track, a kind of like an anthem for girls, because I just felt like I didn't have one, like, I couldn't even think of one to like listen to, like as just a listener and have.
Yeah.
When you're a girl, you just want to listen to something empowering. And feel like, yeah, I don't care. And
it's probably
what?
Destiny Child writings on the wall.
Yeah,
that
you know
whole
that. Yeah, that whole. Yeah, that. Yeah, you know that
made
kind
me
of
think
vibe.
About having the album and listening to it, and being like, oh my
that
god,
that album is so
maybe
sick.
I can be powerful.
You know, that album is hard, but loads of those songs, like, I don't feel like we have, and I listen to a lot of music, you get me? So I was like, you know what, I want to make an anthem. And then it was like obviously all over the place that it's the 100th year of like the women's vote, the suffragette. I was getting booked for so many things to do with the suffragettes and women's rights and stuff.
We would like to book women now.
Yeah, you know, around the 8th of March where everyone gets bookings because it's International Women's Day. But yeah, I just thought I really want to make like a woman's anthem. I didn't think about the suffragettes at the time. I just wanted to make a track for girls to just shout to and feel happy about.
What tunes have really been resonating apart from that from your new catalogue of music?
I did two grime tracks and they've been, so Spit For Me and Give Me That, they've been you know, received really well, and radio DJs have really enjoyed them, and kind of when one plays it the other one wants to play it kind of vibe. And Spit For Me got playlisted on Spotify for the first time in my entire life. So that's been crazy.
So you also put on poetry events, and that's something, well, you both have in common is the poetry. You've seen Word on the Street grow so much, right? So
it's monthly. I run and book artists. I do everything on my own. I flyer it on my own. I promote on my own.
Can I say, I don't know how you do it, to be honest, Shady, because probably a lot of people don't realize it about you, and it's taken me a long time to realize.
Yeah.
Like, first I knew you because of your music, but then you also run Word on the Street, and I didn't realize you run that completely on your own.
Yeah.
And I know what it is to run a monthly event is mad.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's so much energy. Yeah. And to the scale of success, you've done it over 2 years. Plus, you're also working other jobs. Like, Shady brought so many young people to come and see Poet in the Corner.
I just don't sleep.
Do you know what I mean? It's amazing.
Relentless, but which is the way it should be.
I get shook because I'm like, you know, am I actually addicted to constantly doing things? Yeah. I'm naturally, yes, as a person, I'm a Cancerian. I was the only child for a very long time. I've always done things to keep myself busy. But when I have had, like, I was ill this week, I'm like, you know, like waiting, like recovering at the moment. Mm. And I was at home and I was messaging Breaking Convention saying, I've got my laptop here. I can like do emails from the laptop. Yeah. And Misha at work was just like, just rest. Like if you're taking a sick day, you can actually rest.
But that's the thing. But then I'm there going, there's no sick days.
All day to message someone or be productive, or means I have a whole day of being able to make something happen.
Yeah, of course, exactly.
It actually took me 3 years of therapy to get to the bottom of that. Right. I have, that is a,
what's the answer, Debbie? Tell us.
That is a genuine problem for me. Is so for me, what it boiled down to was I didn't value myself, I valued my work. All of my value came from my productivity, not me.
Yeah.
That was it. So if I wasn't working, I was worthless.
So what's going to happen here is when I'm editing this, I'm just going to go and listen to that.
Put it on loop. Again, what you should do is, again, in the edit, can you just make it loop for a while?
Subconsciously.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow. You know, I'm quite drunk already. But what I will say is that, that's just blowing my mind.
Yeah.
That is just...
That took 3 years of therapy.
You know what I mean? I've just stolen 3 years of therapy. Like,
no, but seriously, that was a big epiphany for me. And it was probably 3 years into counselling. And keep in mind, right, I've run my own company for 6 years. I've got 2 degrees. I've lectured around the world. I've done all this stuff. You know, I started my company when I was 20. I was running it on my own for two years. I ran it for 6 years. It was the biggest organisation of its kind in the region, if not the country. And it took me to like 26 to sit there and I just looked at my counsellor, 3 years of counselling, and went, I'm proud of myself, you know.
Oh, I can't even say that. No, even you saying it, thinking about me saying it, I can't say it.
And even now, it's still a fight to do that.
Yeah.
And it took, you need stillness for that. You really need stillness. You really need rest. And I remember the amount of times I've worked myself into like very severe illness. I've got hyperextension. I've like messed up my ankle. I'm having a scan on my shoulder in a few weeks. There was a point where I couldn't walk around the house because I'd messed my ankle up so much. And it was last year I had to cancel about $2,000 worth of work because I got bronchitis. I couldn't breathe. I was on steroids. I was on a nebulizer. I was in hospital and I'm coughing. Like every time I speak, I'm coughing. And I was saying to my producer, like, maybe I can do it. Maybe I can do it. And then it was, a friend of mine, Rachel, who I was saying, you know, worst comes to worst, I have to cancel that show. That's terrible, but I have to cancel the shows. And she had to stop me. She said, Deborah, worst comes to worst isn't cancelling the shows. It is irreparable damage to your health.
So true.
It's so deep, isn't
so
it?
So true.
And I think you really need to ask yourself that question, because when you're doing work for other people, a lot of problems come from that, because then also what other people thought of my work became more important in a way than what I thought. It was, if you don't love yourself and appreciate yourself inherently, and then you don't give yourself rest, and I just think, I think it's a very big, complicated thing, and people should really think about it. And I also think there are extra complications if you're a woman, if you're queer, if you're working class, if you're someone where society has told you this is a place you're not supposed to be, where you maybe inherently work harder and think that it's all about my work has got me here. It's nothing to do with people don't think I should be here, but my work got me here.
You've got a space, you've finally got a space in, you know, in something, and you want to work for it.
I don't know if you guys ever feel this, but sometimes even if I get all of the accolades, even if I get all of the things that I want to happen happening, I just go, well, what do these people know? They don't really understand anyway. Like, I need to do something even better because this isn't good enough. So it doesn't even matter that there is something there. I had to chat to my therapist about it because I was like, I just came off stage last night, like 1,000 people. She was like, how did you feel? And I went, yo, when I was on stage, I felt fucking sick. When I stepped off stage and I thought, yo, I'm not shit because I'm not doing this every night. And you know what? They don't think they're just here for a good time. They don't know anything that they're doing. You know what I mean? Like, that is fucking ridiculous.
But this is why I think rest and stillness is so important. And I was going to say this when you asked, like, how did I deal with how big the show was? And when I was doing the show, and I'm sure we're all like this, I just focused on one thing at a time. Ooh. So it's like, if I needed to learn choreography, I didn't think about anything else, I just learned choreography. If I needed to do an edit, I just did an edit. If I needed to perform a show, I just performed a show. Yeah. But what was really important for me is that I'd have periods of time, and I built this in from day, that I'd have like maybe 2 hours before the show or 30 minutes, whatever, where I'd just lie down and just breathe. And just be present. And those are the moments when I cry, when I just be completely overwhelmed. But I'm allowed to be like, you've just done this thing, you know. And that's when I'd realise, you know, I've said things in this show that I didn't think I'd say to anyone until my parents were dead.
Yeah.
You know, and you're thinking that alone is, what can I say about that? And I think you need space and time to really reflect on what you've achieved for you.
Yeah.
There'll always be a bigger prize.
Mm.
I'm sure Beyonce has things she wants to achieve.
Yeah, I always try to remind myself that as well.
And I just think, give yourself some air.
Mm. Or...
Speaking.
Yeah.
Speaking to
I
me.
Also feel like, you know, it's hard because I take all of that in and I always think, yeah, I definitely don't do stillness and stuff a lot. But then I will book like a week away or a 2 day spa day and stuff. I do try and get them in.
Good.
But when I'm there, and it's most of the time when I'm not on my phone or when I'm not doing something, that good ideas will come to me anyway. Mm. But like sometimes I think, or is it okay and is it normal to actually just enjoy doing lots of work? Do you get me? Like I have this battle with myself because I'm like, you have tried to chill out and you are on holiday and it's great, but are you looking forward and you're itching to go back to work? Is it because it's something you like doing? And then I'm like, or is that my brain telling me I like doing it because I'm addicted to doing
it's
it?
It's a minefield. It's a minefield.
It's so hard to navigate.
It's what I say to everyone all of the time is it's purpose. And if you feel like you've got purpose, whether it's your... carving a table, or whether you're like making paper airplanes or painting toy trains or whatever it is, if you've got purpose and a reason to wake up every morning, then I feel like that is what makes you happy. Like if you've got a project, if you've got something or somebody to look out for, responsibility, something to finish, you know, like I definitely had that.
But that's the other thing about space that I think is important. So for me, it's like, so it's neurologically proven, if you are mindful, if you are present, A, you cannot think about the future or the past, and therefore you cannot be depressed or anxious. For me, being mindful, being present is being in your body, thinking, feeling the breath come in and out, feeling where maybe your body hurts, maybe where it is easy, where it is calm. And it's like, for me, I need to do that to know really, in a more profound sense, where I want to go. Because I can keep moving.
Yeah.
I can do stuff. I can, let's sit right here, Deborah, come up with some ideas. I could be like, blah, 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 blah. And I'll feel excited because I'm doing stuff, because I like doing stuff, because Deborah does stuff.
Yeah.
But really, like at my, in my gut, in my core, if you lay me on the floor and said, Deborah, breathe for 30 minutes and feel, would that be like the quintessential thing that I need to do now? I don't know unless you give me that 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I'd challenge you because I'm the same as you. And for so long, I'd be on holiday twiddling my thumbs like, I need to go back and look at my to-do list.
Yeah. You know where I had the worst time of my entire life?
Oh my God, Disneyland, no.
No.
Go on.
In a, are we allowed to swear?
Yeah,
I mean, we've been swearing. He said cunt when we said
that. Yeah, the cunt was probably the first word I said.
In a cunting, fucking, motherfucking bitch bastard floating pod thing in a spa.
Oh.
Have you done those?
I've never done it, but I've always wanted to.
Those salt water pod things. Yeah, I don't even remember what they're called. Listen.
Right, okay.
I think, maybe you've got a problem.
Listen. Okay. I went in to this every single person.
Wait, is it called the isolation chamber or something like that, right?
Bro, no, that sounds like torture.
Flotation
therapy. Okay. Flotation therapy. Thank you.
Got there in the end.
I was
isolation chamber sounds like
Guantanamo Bay. I think that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah, sorry.
Wow. Yeah, that's kind of hardcore. Flotation chamber. Yeah. Flotation chamber. Flotation therapy, but probably called a chamber because to me it was torturous. But everyone had these amazing reviews about these flotation therapy tank mm-hmm. things. And oh my God,
yeah.
I zoned out for a whole hour. It was so beautiful. Just went into nowhere and stuff. And I was like, bro, this sounds like something I need. It kept getting recommended to me. So I went to this really like 5-star luxury spa place with like the best flotation tank and like blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so went in, it was 45 minutes and she's giving you a towel. It smells amazing. There's this big massive pod yeah. and like they like lift up the doors and it's like lukewarm, like a bath mm. and it's dark and it's got these little twinkly starlights. It looks like the most peaceful thing in yeah. the world. So anyway, went in.
Crying for an anxiety attack.
Bravo, I went in. This woman was like, shall I close the door or leave it open? I was like, yeah, you can leave it open for now. She was like, oh, but it might disturb you if you get up and want to do it.
Save me.
I told her to shut the ting, right? So she shut the ting, lying there. And then I was like, wow. Oh, okay, this is nice. And it was like really quiet. I was like, okay. And then it's just the sound of the water you're kind of lying in. Cause it comes up to like, you're floating. It comes up like maybe just past your ears. So you're just, I'm just like lying there. And I was like, God, man, I feel like I've been in it for time. Like,
seconds.
I was like, oh, what's this? And there's like a little button on the side, press the button and the lights started changing. And I was like, oh, this is so cool. So I pressed the button.
So what you're telling me is you exhausted all of your means of entertainment within 30 like, seconds.
Pressed like three buttons. One was for music, one was for light changing, one was to heat it up. Then I was like, I wonder what it's like to like.
I'm so intrigued. No, this is great. No, she said, it's not exciting. Don't worry.
I said, I wonder what it's like to like flip round.
Okay. Great. Okay. How was it?
Anyway, I was like, I started getting really anxious.
Yeah, of course.
And I was like, getting a bit panicky and going, oh man, no one leaves this. What's wrong with you? Everyone says it's chill. Just chill out. So I'm lying there going, God, man, it must be like half an hour by now. Anyway, this went on for a bit and then I started getting like proper like palpitations. Like mm-hmm. I wasn't enjoying it. Open this door. There's like, I come out and I'm like trying to dry and then there's like salt shower things. I was like, look, got my towel and I came out. The woman's like, oh my God, is everything okay and stuff? I was like, oh really, you know what? I really can't take anymore. Looked at the clock. It was like 9 minutes.
Oh.
But this is, you went straight up into your head.
I did a hot pod yoga last week.
I heard that intense. Bikram,
but it's called hot pod. They're just like, dude, it's basically white people yoga. They've got like
that's why it's called hot pod because yeah, I think exactly. It is called Bikram
yeah.
yoga.
I mean, but yeah,
no, Bikram is also white people yoga.
Oh, yeah. Is it? Oh, okay.
So this is like it's a room in East London in London Fields where they've put this inflatable thing together.
Absolutely. Oh wow!
And then they zip it up, which to be fair with me with my like mild claustrophobia that I don't like to admit to was fucking weird. And then it's just filled with like heaters, like intense heaters. And then you have to do yoga, all kinds of like I used to do yoga. I do love it. Like I'm a little bit flexible. I'm not crazy flexible, but I can do it. And you know what I'm saying, ladies. And so
that's how they get pregnant.
Step one, do yoga with me, baby. So I was doing this thing. It was so hot, man. And I went like...
Go up to like past some mad temperatures?
Yeah, yeah. Past your internal body temperature.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And before you go in, they go, you're going to want to leave. You're really... you're going to think you're going to die. But just don't leave. Wow. All you need to do is not
ever.
And I'm like, am I gonna die? I thought I was gonna die when I did hot yoga. I thought I was. I
how long did you last?
I lasted the whole thing.
Yeah. Oh wow! Well done.
Because they tell you not to leave. They warn you that the bad things will happen.
Yeah, bad things outside those doors. Are zombies.
So funny.
So no, like it was all women, which is great. There was two guys though. Obviously, the two guys are like, you know, six packed out and like all this shit, and they're there with their shirts off and shorts. I'm there in like.
Full tracksuit.
A hoodie, full tracky, like full tracksuit.
Thermal socks and his Adidas sliders.
You know what I mean? Like, fam, I'm doing yoga, yeah, but I'm looking sick.
My yay is different to your yay.
But trust me, I regretted it. I was like, I should have worn a vest. Anyway, it was very intense. And I don't know if I'll do it again, but I'm glad I did it. Yeah. I'll do normal yoga. I'll do like bareback yoga.
Apparently hot yoga is bareback.
You know, just normal yoga. Yoga without the heat.
Get pregnant.
Just a little. Well, you know what? Like I want to keep talking, but it's nearly. I want to also have the piss break. But I've got no. You know what? No, I'm going to talk to you that after the piss break. We're going to break right now for like 3 minutes, and we'll be right back.
Bye.
All right.
And that's how they got pregnant.
And that is.
This is the and that's how they got pregnant podcast.
And that is how they got pregnant. So. Whoa. They said it couldn't happen that way. So as is the tradition, but I've got two one non-drinker and one semi-drinker. So I'm doing. I mean, that's still a pretty big shot.
Yeah, that's yeah. You, yeah, yeah. When I said no, you added a lot.
Usually half yeah. the girth of that.
That's what he said.
That's literally what they all say to me. Okay,
it's a double
that
shot.
Looks a
so
lot.
So I've got a double shot just because I'm doing it. You know, for these guys. Okay, so cheers to you. I can cheers a non-alcoholic beverage. Thank you for coming. Thank you. My pleasure.
Jeez.
Oh Christ!
You back that quick, homie?
And what I have to say, that's really, really delicious. And I have to use this opportunity to big up Reka Vodka for sending through all of the vodka, because you know vodka is my favorite drink because I have a problem. It's from Iceland, small batch vodka, handcrafted in Iceland. Big up Reka every time. It's got loads of cool symbols on it.
Oh wow!
It says something about lava rock filtration.
Reka spelled with an A.
Oh my!
The packaging is really nice.
It's really swanky.
Because
really
I thought Iceland only do like frozen goods and stuff.
Do you know what?
I'm only joking. No, I'm joking. Sorry, did that ruin your plug?
Both looked at you as though it was a serious comment.
I thought that was a serious comment. We all thought that was a serious comment.
My bad.
True story, when I was in Iceland, guess how much an aubergine was in the supermarket, guys?
Wait, which Iceland are we talking about
£8
now?
£8.
How did you get that exact?
I've told you this story. No, I told you this story.
I swear on my life, you haven't.
No way.
You genuinely
it
haven't.
Is £8.
What for
I've
an aubergine?
You've been to.
What,
I
you
know
both
about their aubergine inflation.
You both clearly went to Iceland and you both went to pick one aubergine. That's
clearly,
so joke.
That is it. We both. Well, no, that's it.
Look, this just shows I have sound logic. I just thought Iceland. That does Iceland. Does it seem like a place where produce would be easy to come by?
You know,
an aubergine,
great logic.
You know, needs warmth, so probably very expensive.
Yeah, but that was a really on point number.
Yeah, that was
really on point.
Yeah, but we didn't have good maths teachers and stuff either.
We certainly didn't. Most of them came out as pedos anyway.
Oh no, yeah, sorry, that's what? Actually true.
That is actually true.
That's a whole other podcast.
That's a whole other podcast. I actually had one other Highgate Wood alum on this show. Sway came.
Oh
on
wow!
Did it.
What sort of music education was your school getting?
Didn't Chip go
what
to
our
no, he did not.
I swear he did.
I know he was from
it was just
Park,
me and Jesse J at my school.
Oh, just me and Jesse J.
Hold on, I swear
school.
I actually want to Google Wikipedia this because I swear he did.
Really? Okay, well, so thank big up to Reka, R-E-Y-K-A Reka, and I just crafted in Borgans. I don't even know where that is, but I am fully down. So look, we've done the halftime thing. I've done the shots. I've taken the hit for the guys here. I've got lots of talking points. I've got lots of things to talk about that I want to talk about with you guys in this time. But before I even do so, this is what we do. We've got segments in season two because it's me.
Like an orange.
Like an orange, just like an orange.
So professional.
Except more angry, like an angry orange. So this is the section. It is called Under the Patio, named after my brand new release, Under the Patio, which if you haven't heard, please do so right now. This is the section where it involves a lot. Look, I have an issue with anger. None of us are under any false pretenses here. We all know this. And if you have listened to episode 9 of this podcast, you have known that I've Don't worry, guys. They're not even out yet. They're not even out yet. Only three episodes have been out. Don't, you guys look nervous. Yay. Don't worry.
We both looked at each other like, I haven't watched that one.
That's fine. That's fine. That's fine. Look,
have you seen that episode now?
Literally, only episode three has dropped. So it's fine. So what I've been doing each time is that I suggest a selection, a myriad of scenarios that I have encountered, people that really piss me off, things that they do. And I'm going to tell you the scenarios, and then you guys tell me what you think the capital punishment should be and whether or not they should be buried underneath the patio.
Oh, wow.
So whether or not they should be killed, or maybe it should just be a mere slap on the wrists.
Okay.
Whether I'm just overreacting, which some people have suggested. But there is always one thing. There's always one that I give the guests where they say that capital punishment is the only answer. So there's always going to be something that upsets you.
I just like to say that I'm a pacifist and I do not support capital punishment.
This is all fictional.
Okay.
This is all fictional. Okay.
Let me drink some more rum and I might stop being a pacifist.
I'm about to pour me something as well.
Okay, look, I'm going to start with a really nice and easy one, okay. guys? Because you guys are pacifists, you know, you're not down with this murdery stuff. So I'll start with a simple one, and I imagine you'll just prescribe a slap on the wrist, okay? People that call you, you miss their call, and you immediately call them back, and then they don't answer. What's that all about?
That is so fucking annoying.
How annoying is that?
I know.
Why did you call me? What are you doing in that 5 seconds? I've just called you back. I was taking a shit.
Yeah, they're always taking a shit. That's the answer.
Corinne was taking a shit.
I was taking a shit. I'm always taking a shit. So
What happens in those few minutes? Even some people do it by text. Like they'll ask you something and then like you'll either reply or answer or call, and then it's just...
There's a flurry. They send a flurry of questions. A veritable muck flurry of questions. And then you reply, and then what's going on? Where have they gone? Where have you gone?
I mean, it's really
under the
annoying.
Fucking patio. That's where you gone, bruv. You should kill them.
No way. I think that's hard.
That was the evilest face I've ever. Okay. I don't like unsolicited phone calls.
Yeah. See, this is something that pops up. I'm glad you said it. It's popped up on quite a few of the episodes so far. This is episode 9. It's popped up on quite a few. I've mentioned it a lot of few times, and I'll say it again. Listeners, you know this already. I think phones shouldn't even have a call function.
Yeah, I agree.
The voice note is enough.
Yeah.
Voice note's fine.
Voice note is enough.
It's not true. It's so non-committal. I think that phoning, they should have a phone function, but it should be consensual. Maybe they should be... There should be a consensual phone function. You should be able to schedule your call with me. I sign it off. Maybe even there is a co-signatory on the phoning function.
Here we go. A notary, if you will. Okay, all right.
But yeah, some people, do you know what? There's certain people that will just call me out of nowhere, and I just always know they're either going to ask me something or they're chatting fraff.
But you know what? Sometimes I like it if I'm doing the old walk down the road phone call. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's the only time that I call somebody. If I'm walking down the road or I'm putting away washing.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk to anyone on the phone unless I'm doing that.
So you only like it when it's serving you?
Yes! Yes!
But Shay, all you ever do is serve other people. So maybe you could do some...
on a real level, if I really think about it, I really don't enjoy talking on the phone. I really think you can message stuff. The only person I will talk to on the phone is my granny or my mum.
Yeah, you've got...
Or my little sister.
Yeah, family's different.
That's it.
Yeah, family's
Otherwise,
different.
Like... There is, for example, even with like work, like music stuff or whatever, there's sometimes some people, they're like, oh, when are you free for a chat? And I'm like, oh, it's cool. Maybe just put it in a message or an email and stuff. And they're like, oh, but you know, like I can just call you. And I'm like, that's so weird, especially when I don't really know you that well. Like we've only just met randomly at an event once and now you're messaging.
But you know what? I don't think I'd enjoy, but I do actually enjoy, which is a video call.
No.
So no, wait. Hear me out.
Sorry.
So two things. So two people that I will video call.
Okay,
right? One is my godchildren. which they live quite far from me.
Yeah.
So to be able to just see them and interact with them makes me very happy. And I forget that. And then if I have a video with cool them, it really makes me happy. And then my partner, who lives in the Caribbean quite a lot, I don't see him for long periods of time.
That's really nice. That's family.
That's family. Yeah, that's different. Yeah. That's all good.
But anyone else, like I've just met you in an event, and you want to like talk about something further and you're insisting on talking on the phone.
Yeah.
But you know what else I do like? A good drunk phone call.
Do you know when you're like, either I'm receiving it or I'm...
I mean, you have to be... Yeah. If you're like so drunk, you can't string together words.
I do that.
I love a good like confessional drunk call. You know when someone's calling you and they're like, I love you. Do you remember the time... You made me broccoli in the morning, and it made no sense, but I just thought, I'm in love with you, because who else would make such a horrible vegetable? And you just think, only this level of random specificity could exist now. And I know that you love me because you said that.
That's so funny. As the consistently sober friend, I have witnessed many of these situations. On both ends. And like usually I'm there going, I really know I need to stop this call or this happening right now. But then I'm like, but then maybe like the, you know, energetically or just like meant to be, this should be happening. And it's just, so I just usually just watch it and then tell them the next day what happened.
So I didn't really drink for time. I go raving on my own a lot. Mm. So I can't.
I've seen you plenty
so
times.
It would be stupid for me as a lone woman going raving to be drunk. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So I didn't drink for a really long time. Mm. And then for a bit, as someone that is generally very composed, very in control, I just thought, you know what, fuck it. I'm going to start getting drunk more. I don't do any drugs. Let's just get drunk more. And actually, I think there's something... You learn bits about yourself from just being like at your most shambolic or shambolized, as Cassie from my show would say, shambolized. Your most shambolized.
I love it.
Yeah. You think, actually, it's good to know that that's as bad as it gets for me.
That's as low as I'll go.
Eating cold beans from the can on my doorstep whilst crying about Tim from year 8 who dumped me. That's as bad as it gets.
And it doesn't get worse than that.
Well, I did once throw up in my handbag in an Uber.
Oh, I mean, come on. That's respectable, if anything, because you're not doing it on the car.
It's true.
I once threw up out of the window as a car, like a dog flapping its tongue in the wind.
But again, you cared about the interior of the car. And the exterior is much harder to clean.
That just means you're a nice person.
I cared about him. I said, boss man, when I get home, I am going to take out... the fucking Mr. Muscle, and I'm going to clean the side of your car. Yeah. And I'm going to clean the side that got, you know, the
yak.
I once threw up in the Burger King in Oxford Circus. Is it no Oxford Circus? No.
Leicester Square.
Yeah. On the Burger King.
Why can
King
I
in there,
picture this?
And I was being sick, and then they called the police because they thought I'd taken drugs. I was like 14. So I was sick, I'm still living with my strict Mormon parents, I get out, the police are all there. I grabbed both sides of the policewoman's face and breathed all over her and just went, there's only vodka, it's fine. And then they took me into the police van to like test me and stuff. And I went, my parents are Mormon. You can't tell them. You can't tell them, they'll kill
That's
me. My parents
so
are Mormon.
Funny.
My parents are Mormon. And again, hopefully my parents are not watching this, in which case this did not happen. It's all a fictional story.
Luckily, it's a podcast and they can't watch it. So that's okay.
Can you imagine they're just sitting there and staring with no sound?
Yeah,
they're just looking at it.
Just staring at it. I can't even remember what the initial under the patio
bury
was.
Bury them under the patio.
Okay, bury them under the patio.
Wait, is this either or?
It was if you call someone
and they don't, someone
calls you.
If someone calls you and they're in blah, 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 and they don't blah, 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 then just kill them. Okay, cool. Next one.
No,
someone calls you constantly and you call them back and they don't answer.
Can I say, I think this would be the reprimand. I will never answer the phone to you again.
Yeah, okay. See, that's good. That's good. Some people do diplomatic ones.
Well, maybe like a year.
Yeah.
Like a year ban.
It's like the mute button on Twitter.
Just mute. Oh my gosh. I do that a lot.
Me too.
Oh, so good. Turn off retweets. Okay. People who play... devil's advocate, you know, where they're like, listen guys, look, I see your point of view, but let me play devil's advocate. Why are you doing this? You're my friend.
But can I just say, that's actually me. I even had this argument with my partner last night.
No, oh my God.
Not specifically the phrase devil's advocate, but he was like, have you noticed, Deborah, whenever I'm just trying to tell you something about my life, you're like, yeah, but what about the opposite side of that thing? And he was like, Anne, I want to kill you. So if I'm like, you know, Deborah, I can't go and work there, it's too far away. And I'm like, what about you ride a bike? He's like, Deborah, it's 2 hours away. I'm like, that's fine, I rode 2 hours the other day. And he's like, but I've got a massive bag with my gym stuff. And I'm like, buy a bigger bag then. And I'm just like always trying to.
I think that's like solution based.
Solution based, but it's slightly
that's
antagonistic.
It's not like, listen, I feel like women are being underpaid and overexploited in our society. And then someone goes, hey, so let me play devil's advocate, okay?
Species. Someone said that to you.
No, but I'm saying, what if they did?
No, I think Corey particularly picked that example.
I picked an example to try and rouse a death sentence out of you.
People that pay devil's advocate are annoying. I think it's really important to try and always consider the other side of a story.
Definitely. Okay. All
they
right.
Are
so,
annoying,
so,
though.
Look, so that one, you know, that one, okay. People that play devil's advocate, just maybe
they can just stand in the corner.
You need to ask yourself, why are they playing devil's advocate? Are they playing it genuinely to be helpful and to expand knowledge, or are they just being like a cocky, annoying bastard? Yeah.
And if they're being a cocky, annoying bastard,
then patio.
Under the patio.
Okay. I'm glad we agree. This is good. We're all simpatico.
We're simpatico.
I feel like people say that word.
Right. We've justified our way into their death.
That's it. Great. This is what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to. People that say, but you were so good together after a breakup.
Oh my God. That is so fucking
annoying.
People say that.
Yeah, I've had that.
Yep.
It's fucking annoying as fuck. I just feel like, you know, as well, because I'm not someone to badmouth someone I've been with, only like my really close friend or someone would know.
Yeah,
so sometimes you want to sit there going, well, actually, you know, he was. And I'm just like, die.
Die.
But yeah.
Yeah, no. Dead. I would kill them all.
It's really annoying. I just feel like everyone's always got something to say, though, don't they, about
someone
else.
But you're so good together. But you would. How is
they
that?
You,
how
they
is
should
that
go out
helping?
With them then.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. You go out with them, and you know what? You go on a date with them, and then I'll make sure that I know where to kill you, because you'll both be in the same place at the same time, so you can just die together happily.
Great.
So there's people that say you look tired.
That's rude, isn't it?
Can I also say, as a woman, often you're just not wearing makeup. Do you know sometimes
it's
you're actually really well rested? Yeah. And it's just like certain people, you're like, you're just not used to seeing me without makeup. This is just my face.
Yeah. Wow. But that's misogyny. It's in action. There was a tweet I saw today.
No, girls will do it. I think like some, I've had.
Some girls will do it.
But I don't think they're being malicious. I think they just genuinely think you look tired or they haven't seen you not look so alert.
Like, but then why say it? I saw this thing.
The thing today was like,
I don't know if one of you guys tweeted it. Maybe. Then I apologize for telling you something back to you. But the whole thing, that if it's not something you can change, then why comment on
but
it?
But also, can I say intent again? Because I think I have genuinely had people say that to me, or said it to people, whereby they genuinely are worried about me.
I think there's...
Some people are saying it, they're like, I judge you by your appearance.
Yeah, and you know, like I was going to say, being Iranian, we have like, I swear, I don't know if like Iranian, especially the older generation, like I don't know what the fuck is in their like, let me raise an Iranian woman book that they abide by. That says,
there's a book, guys.
On Amazon now.
Literally always have to comment
on your appearance.
Yeah, but especially weight. My aunties, like, I remember, like, hardcore Persian women rows and like hour-long phone conversations of beef have come from someone going, oh, wow, you've put on some pounds. And then the other one going, like, she's probably been on like the worst diet of her life and she's trying to lose weight and someone's just said to her, like, you've put on weight. Or they'll come in and go, are you okay? Oh my God, you look so skinny. You've lost so much weight. Is everything okay? Do you have money to eat? And then it's like, cause loads of issues. So it's really bad. But some women like really do like stuff like that maliciously. I don't know if it's a Middle Eastern
thing. This has been a previous Under the Patio where I've asked people that comment on your weight, whether positively or negatively.
But I think the tired and the weight, like if I see, even at work, if someone comes in and I actually think they might look tired, I just think it's impolite. Like, I wouldn't go, oh, you look like really tired. Like,
yeah.
How is that going to make them feel like better? Or
you
what?
Just, offer, like, instead yeah, of like, that, you go, you look like a person that needs a coffee.
Like,
what
you
or saying?
Are you okay? Or like, yeah.
Yeah, or you're okay. Like, let's go have a tea. Let's do yeah. something. Think of it positively.
Like, in context and intent, it's okay. If you're saying yeah. it to your best friend or your partner or something because you care about them.
Yeah, I mean, my yeah. nan, 94 years old today, said...
Happy birthday, Nan.
She wasn't happy 94 today, but she is... Okay. When I saw her today, she was still 94.
Okay, I get it.
But no, she goes... she goes to me, well, look at you. And I went, what do you mean, Nana? She was like, well, you haven't put on any weight or lost any weight. And I was like,
what?
How is this a compliment? I don't understand.
Is that how
what
your
you're
nan
saying.
Gives compliments?
Yeah.
That's, you are that's... the same.
Yeah. You've maintained the correct yeah. amount of weight. The,
yeah. I think like, that's like you're consistent.
Yeah, I was like, cool.
And you know what? No, sometimes no, I think it's how people hold you in their heads. Because there's certain people I know that every time I see them, they will say, I look like I've put on weight, or I look like I've lost weight, or I look like I'm tired. Yeah. And I just think, maybe you just imagine me more awake than yeah. I am, yeah. or fatter than I am, or skinnier than I am. Maybe you need to readjust your perception yeah. of me.
Maybe they need yeah. to go on a diet.
Yeah.
Maybe they need to get some more sleep. And I think that it's projections. So
then you should just say, maybe you should give me your lunch. You know,
that's it. So under the patio to all of them. that's it. I'm taking control of that. So Shay, wait a second. Is your eye okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Well, I'm due for... Well, this is going out in December. So let's manifest. Oh, I had surgery and it went really well.
Okay.
Surgery? Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I have like an eyelid
I can always
thing.
Cut this out if you want me to. This is all.
Oh, I just think it might be boring.
No,
I just
that's
have an
right.
eyelid thing that just comes from like a gland yeah. behind my eyelash swelling. And yeah. it was really itchy.
Look, our bodies are so fascinating. There's something ridiculous that happens when you're...
You should go from that, from put them all under the patio. Because our bodies are so fascinating. Like, what are you going to do
ladies.
With the bodies?
Okay. No, so our bodies are so fascinating. But when I was super, super stressed working with a rapper, I haven't actually spoken to about this on the podcast in 29 episodes. But when I was working with a rapper once that was so stressful... It will remain unnamed until after the podcast.
Hey. That
was so, so stressful. The one day I woke up and I had my entire jaw had expanded.
Oh
so I looked
God.
Like a bullfrog underneath my jaw. I already
is that,
had.
Is that thyroid?
Yeah, no, well, oh, right. You would think that
white,
was.
Your white blood cells are produced.
White blood
isn't
cells.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Look, all I know is oh that, that, I, that it was underneath. I already had a couple chins anyway. I was a little bit bigger than I was.
From
I already
stress,
had a couple chins.
Know.
But then my whole underneath my face was huge. I looked like a bullfrog. And I was freaked out. I thought, you know, what is this? It must be dentistry. It must be to do with that. I went to my dentist. He was like, no, mate, this is not dentist related. Your teeth are fine. I was like, then I went to A&E. They were like, we don't know what this is. And then it just didn't go away. Then I went to a specialist. I went to a teaching hospital. And if I shit on my face, tell me. And so if I...
You said if I shit on my face, tell me. And I thought,
if I,
maybe just don't shit on your own face.
If
but
I
yeah.
do, if I do a square turn on my face, please tell me. Okay, so...
Oh
all right, so... So here I was. I was like, I'm going to... So I went to a student hospital somewhere in central London. And I went there because no one knew what it was and why I looked like a fucking bullfrog. And so I went to these guys. I walked in this room. They'd booked me in for something. It was a teaching hospital. And literally, it was an audience. It was a lecture. So there was like, for some reason, it was 30 women doctors, female doctors.
Wow.
Also, some of them very attractive. And I'm in there
interested
walking,
in bullfrogs.
bullfrog specialists. So I walk in there and there's a dentist chair or like a whatever chair, reclining chair in the middle of the room. So I sit in it and I lay back and I'm staring at these people, literally 100. I'm not saying women in any kind of way. I'm just saying it literally was 100%.
Sexy. You know, imagine people that you might fancy.
Yeah.
All looking at you, you look like a bullfrog.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Oh my God.
Anyone would be nervous, irrelevant of how they looked.
I looked like a Belushi had taken a shit under my face. I looked awful. And so here I was staring at them and this male doctor walks in, looks at me, looks at the crowd, looks at me and goes, well, you got a harem in here or something? Oh my God.
Whoa.
For a start, in a professional capacity.
did people like boo him? I feel like I'll be like boo. Like he came out like a boo, like a baddie in WrestleMania. You know what I mean? Like, do you know what I mean?
Boo, but also find out what's wrong with me and yeah. then boo. So then he looked at me and he went, okay, well, I know what the problem is. And he goes, have you been stressed? I went, I mean, so stressed. He goes, have you been gritting your teeth? And I was like, every single day because of this rapper who's wow. driving me insane that I'm making an album with. And he's like, well, your problem here is you have been gritting your teeth so much that your saliva glands have restricted. And because of that, they've become infected. And then all of underneath your chin has become huge.
That's incredible.
Yeah, incredible, right? And then so he goes, all I can do, I can't even prescribe you anything. He goes, just relax.
Yeah.
Relax your jaw anytime you feel it tensing. And literally I did that. And within a couple of days, it just went away.
It's mad because that's one of the things I was going to say to you about breath work and how that helps you calm you down is one of the things our breath coach and voice coach on the show taught us to do was massage our jaws. Mm. So I grip my, I click, my jaw can click.
Yeah, me too.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And I also grind my teeth when I sleep.
Yeah, well. Same,
and,
same.
And obviously we all speak so much in what we
yeah.
do.
Yeah.
And actually it's mad. Like the amount of tension you hold. Mm. I hate touching my face. So I put a bandana over my face and then I literally massage and trigger point all down my jaw. It is insane.
Yeah.
Like the amount of tension you just hold in that space.
That's I do it. Nuts. I do it.
Well, that's like that speech therapist that mm-hmm. found there's a point behind your ear that leads down.
So yeah.
That, you know that right hollow, from there, yeah, that yeah. hollow bit behind your ear if you yeah, put your yeah. finger. You and yeah, if you, like if even after doing a show, if you're rapping or spitting or using your voice a lot, if you press into that, it's like the worst pain ever, but you have to keep working it to relax.
Yeah.
Because that's why she was like, my tongue is really tense because my whole jaw and everything all is tense.
People, I love the phrase poo-poo, but people poo-poo this, but it's so, automatically takes the legitimacy out of what I'm saying. Wow. But people poo-poo the fact that, that how important stress and our mind is you know, on a daily basis.
You know what I think about? I was reading this book about how they develop a lot of medications, right?
Mm.
And a lot of medications, so a lot of research goes into placebos.
Mm.
So, you know, sugar tablets that actually have no medicinal yeah. value, right? The reason that medical companies research placebos isn't just to compare if their medication works, but it's because placebos work.
Mm.
Placebos actually work better than depression medication.
Mm.
Antidepressants. Yeah. On scale, if you look at all the research of placebos against antidepressants, placebos work better because they work. Placebo spinal surgery works, right?
Wow.
And it, there's an incremental increase, right? So it's like a capsule works better than a tablet. An injection works better than a capsule.
Yeah.
An injection administered by a nurse is better than one injected by a pharmacist. One injected by a doctor works more than a nurse.
Yeah.
Surgery works better than an injection. So it's just the more we believe it,
yeah.
the more it is in a framing that says, this is something that heals you.
Yeah.
This is something you know to heals you. And the thing that fucking blows my mind, right? People are putting research into this to do things like the following. There was a mental illness that got invented about women's periods, right? It was basically a enhanced version of premenstrual tension. It got invented 1 year. Very soon after, a medication called Sarafin came out, right? Using this idea. So they had pink and purple tablets with a feminine sounding name for women to help them with their periods. Basically, a company had run out of their license to sell Prozac. They'd had like one test that showed it had a slight impact on it, rebranded the medication, just resold it as solving the thing. Wow. Right? Anyway, that's why people do research into placebos. But the thing that fucking blows my mind is we are magic, yo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm like, why is no one saying we are magic, yo? The idea that placebos work, that your belief in a thing makes you physically better, increases your chance of overcoming cancer, any number of ailments. It is proved time and time again. Why is no one talking about that?
We're magic, man.
Mad.
Crazy.
And I'm not saying, oh, if you believe you will get over cancer, you'll get over your cancer. Like, I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying everyone knows medical companies invest millions and millions of pounds in creating elements of a medication, making it pink and purple, calling it a relevant name, because it has an impact on how much better you feel and how quickly you recover.
It's very smart.
But health is so important.
What was the original question?
I can't remember what the
original... Who are you putting under the, patio
was? It wasn't about people that say that you...
You look tired?
You look tired or that...
He got it from there.
You, you and your ex were good together.
Oh yeah, no, I think that was the last one. You and your ex were good together.
But you know what? I'm going to do one last one before we move into the next segment, okay? Because we had... That was a great chat. And I
got deep as fuck.
I got deep and I don't give a fuck. So I'll just do one last one. One tiny little teeny weeny one, okay? People that put their shoes on the bed...
Oh no.
While they're on their feet.
While they're on their feet.
Okay. I just imagine someone taking their shoes off and putting them on your bed.
This is where I put my shoes.
Really sensitive to that. I don't even like the table, like the coffee table.
You don't
table.
Like a table on your bed. Take that table off my bed.
No, you know, like people that like might just lean up and put their shoe on the corner of the dining table.
Oh,
no, that's so unhygienic.
That is worse than your bed. You put food on there.
Yeah. I don't like it when people put their bags on my bed. Like
I think bags are almost as
bad
as
because you put them like on the tube floor.
Yeah, you're
and
putting
stuff.
The rucksack on the tube and you're putting it on my bed next to my pillow.
That's so rude. I'm okay with like end of the bed.
Yeah, just
the end
about.
Of the bed, fair game.
End of
fair
the,
game.
End of the bed?
Just my about. Pillow? I've even done it. Yeah,
that touches
that's
my
rude.
Face.
No.
Would
no.
you?
You're
would
getting suffocated with that bag.
Yes. Under the patio. Under the tarmac.
You were getting under the patio, then under the tarmac. You're getting re-tarmac. The whole house is getting demolished, and then you're getting tarmacked into a new road. That's making a new pathway. Okay. See, there's always one that gets people angry. And that was that one. So thank you guys for that section. So this is the next segment. The title of it changes every single time.
I'm excited.
Every single time it's changed in the past 9 episodes.
When do you change it? Like on the spot?
I change it on the spot.
Oh,
most
no,
of the time.
Really?
Yeah, most of the time.
So it doesn't even exist yet.
It doesn't even exist. I change it on the spot. Except the last episode I had Awate on.
Okay.
And just before Awate came on, I said, give me some words. And he gave me some words and then I changed it with him. Oh. And so because of that, I changed it before you guys arrived. So I've written it down.
Okay.
Usually I change it on the spot. But, you know, I'm not that clever. So I had to write it down. So today's one is called a superior assemblage of critical information extraction for necessary knowledge insertion to the masses. So the first question is... This.
You just brushed over that tone. Like, I can't understand what any of it means.
Oh, it's fine.
Okay,
don't worry.
Right.
It's fine. Everything will be okay in the end. If you could eat one creature from a film or TV show, what would it be and how would you cook it? My standard answer is that long motherfucking dog from Never Ending Story.
Oh! I just got it tattooed on my leg.
No way.
I've got it from my thigh to my under my knee.
Oh my god.
I kind of want to show you now.
What are the
I'll show you after. I literally just got it tattooed onto my leg.
I want to see
Falcor.
What are the chances?
Falcor lives on my leg.
I love
okay,
that
I'm
dog.
Ending this. I'm just going to cancel my entire podcast.
Why would you want to cook and eat it?
Falcor's on my leg.
Oh my god. Okay, she's showing me right now the most intricate design.
It's Falcor.
That is sick.
Oh my god, that is
oh wow. I mean,
that's my leg. Falcor lives on my leg.
That's beautiful, but also
you're gonna cook and eat him.
Oh
yes.
My god, it's beautiful. Why would you want to do that? I love that dog when I was growing up.
It's not a dog, it's a dragon.
Dragon dog. He does look like a dog.
Think about how many ribs he has and how delicious that would be.
He looks like a doggy.
Isn't there a giant turtle in Neverending Stories? Turtle's supposed to be very delicious.
So is this what you're going for? The turtle?
No, wait, sorry. Ask me the whole question.
Okay, all right, here we go. If you could eat one creature from a film or a TV show, I'm quite drunk, what would it be and how would you cook it? That's the question. And now I can't say long dog anymore, so I will say an Ewok. And I'll punch it repeatedly in the face, step on it, maybe I'll put it inside some kind of slow roasting pit. Keep it in there after I've defeathered it, because I guess Ewoks have feathers.
Such a hard
that
question.
That is a really hard question.
Yeah.
I know I'm thinking of such cool films and shows from when I was little. I'm like, I immediately thought of Alice in Wonderland because it has so many different like characters and creatures in
it.
I don't know if I'd want to like kill and eat it. I'm suddenly going on like I'm some vegan vegetarian. I'm like proper not.
No. Persian baby, you're gonna eat everything. Let's go. Also, there's the Mad Hatter.
Bagpuss.
Bag. Okay, no, okay, I'm into bagpuss.
You know, it's because it's a bit like, you know, a lot of those really expensive animals have been like corn fed.
Yeah. Bagpuss has a good diet.
Bagpuss has this sense of like, it's been, bagpuss has been fed like loads of really luxurious foods and just roamed around being all like fat.
Free range.
Yeah, it's a free range bagpuss. Free range corn fed bagpuss.
Free range corn fed bagpuss. That's one of my favorite answers. So how would you cook bagpuss then?
How would I cook bagpuss? Oh, you know, it's like that frog vibe, like put it in a hot water, the bagpuss would jump out. So I'd like give bagpuss a bath, be like, oh, I give it a little massage.
This is so evil.
Oh, bagpuss. It's also really bad because I call my best friend Bagpuss. That's been her nickname since we were like nine.
Wait, okay, so Bagpuss,
he's in a bath, just like,
he's in a bath. You're like, bagpuss. Mr. Puss, so can I light some candles for
you?
Yeah,
exactly. Go out in a nice way.
Incense.
Give him a little kiss on the forehead, play some music,
read a story,
and then just slowly increase the temperature till he's dead.
Yeah, okay, so temperature's going up. So once bagpuss is boiled to your...
You've got to like peel the skin off like a tomato.
Like a tomato, okay.
Wow!
Because it comes off in the end really quickly.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, and then what happens? How do you eat the finished bagpuss? What sort of the preparation?
I think sous vide.
Okay, great. So then you put him in a bag and then you sous vide him. Okay. Yeah. Okay, that's really nice.
With some rosemary.
Oof.
Rosemary,
but
some
not with broccoli.
Some
you don't
salt.
Like broccoli. So
maybe with some cheesy mash.
Oh, yeah, here we go.
And
going in.
And some cabbage.
Okay. Second question. Can you truly love someone who chews with their mouth open?
That's nasty.
Can you perfect person, perfect other half, male, female?
What to what extent?
Yeah, you could tell them to stop doing it, and then it would
Will
fix
they?
The problem.
Will they?
Also, there's a difference between like, do you know, some people like might talk and then they cover it when they're talking, or are you talking like?
Yeah, no. Look,
you're talking chewing the cud.
If you've asked me such a pertinent question, and I've just eaten something delicious, I will cover my mouth and I'll say that's fine. I don't mind that.
He means that.
Yeah. Hey, stop. No.
Do you know what? I can't even, if I'm at work and someone's eating really loudly next to me, if I've tuned into it, I fucked up.
Yeah, fucked up. Forever.
No, but can I also be devil's advocate for a moment?
My God.
Let me just, from under the patio. have you been properly in love, yeah? And then you fall out of love with them and you break up with them and you realise they do something like next level annoying. Yeah, yeah. And the reality is sometimes when you're in love with someone, you just straight up don't see that shit.
Nope.
You don't see that they're eating with their mouth. Everyone else might see it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see it.
But then you're
okay. Because the sex is real.
But then you're okay.
It's real.
Then you're okay. But if you do notice it...
Then it's problematic.
But then you have to just tell them not to, I guess.
Earplugs.
Earplugs.
Yeah, but they shouldn't be... Hold on. If you actually truly love someone, you don't want them to be doing that out around other... Like, other people are going to be disgusted by that as well. They shouldn't.
Is there any reason for us to be disgusted? Yeah, it's just like a weird etiquette thing.
I don't want to
really
see someone's food.
As an adult, I don't think you... Why don't you do
in
it?
In their mouth.
Why don't you do it? Because you just know, like...
Yeah, I think there is a thing which is like...
Adult, you
know,
you
what?
Know not to do
this
that.
Is such a woman thing to do. And as someone that dates women, I can say that, testify that from my experience that women do, is that... To me, it speaks of a bigger issue. It's like you
respect.
Chewing with your mouth open means that you are so unaware of other people's experiences.
Yes.
You care more of your own like eating of your food than anyone else's
own,
exhibition.
That, yeah.
And I think if someone is that unaware, that if you then made them aware and they then continue to choose not to do it as well.
Entitlement.
Yeah, I just think actually, is that the kind of person I want to be
entitlement,
with?
Entitlement, yo. That's entitlement. Exactly.
That you eating your food is more important than anyone else within like a 3 meter radius of you.
This is the point that you've tapped into correctly. This is exactly it.
Yeah.
It's the entitlement. It's the not wanting to think about anyone else except for them.
And imagine then someone goes, oh, you were so good together.
You were so
And then you just be like...
Do you know that I saw everything they ate? Okay, well...
I've never wondered what amylase does to a starch. Well, I know.
Now I know. Okay. Can you truly love someone who thinks Nando's mango and lime is spicy?
No.
Okay, well, that's the end of that.
Can I just say...
Okay, go on.
She...
Wait,
she
I am a straight lemon and herb.
No, lemon and herbs is good,
I don't,
though.
It doesn't taste nice.
I don't do spice. I can't eat really spicy food.
You're Persian, man.
Yeah, which means you don't know geography very well, clearly, because we don't have any hot spices in any of our food.
I guess so. It's more fragrant. It's the saffron.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, okay.
Now, okay, your geography is coming back.
My partner actually doesn't really like spicy food either, in fairness.
No way.
I've had to down the spice.
I like to insult myself at every dinner.
I like
to be in pain.
I like it to be an essential challenge.
Yeah, so my parents just went
to... Do you like to sweat and like come out your nostrils?
And I like to have to blow my nose.
Wow.
Like I just parents just went to Paris to visit my family, the Tunisian family that are all now in Paris. And there's actually a Douyeb, Douyeb's my last name, a Douyeb restaurant in the center of Paris run by my family.
Oh,
huge
nice.
Douyeb sign.
Sick.
And anytime someone goes there, I say, listen, can you just pick me up? I've never been there myself, but can you pick me up this sambal, which is like a really hot fucking chili.
Sambal. Yeah, because they have it in Malaysian food as well.
Exactly.
And there's also,
it runs through Europe, but they don't even call it that there, but it's some kind of hot sauce that they get me. I'm so happy. They're giving me like an unbranded jar from my family in Paris.
Hold on, you need a trip to Paris.
I know, I need to. This sounds wicked. But yeah, they were just like, all the old guys are there. There's like a 92-year-old that still runs it. He's still a Douyeb. He's part of the fam. And so yeah, I'm excited to go check it out.
Apparently the way chilies work is they just open up the senses in your tongue to perceive more heat. Is there, so it's like, let's say they're like a narrow tunnel, they open up into like a V, so it's actually just, it makes them more open to experience more heat. So whenever I'm experiencing a lot of chili, I'm just like, it's just an illusion.
It's a placebo.
Okay, all right. We've been talking for a long time and I'm so drunk.
I've nearly drunk all of my rum.
This is what happens.
I came here intending only to drink one glass
of rum. That's fine. This is what happens. And so the last thing I need to say is thank you so much to Shay and Deborah for coming on the Thanks for Trying podcast. It's been an absolute honor. So thank you very much. I appreciate it.
It's been so fun. Thank you.
You have been listening to the Thanks for Trying podcast, episode 9, season 2, motherfuckers. And big thank you to my special guests, Shay and, of course, Deborah Stevenson. If you ain't listened to them already, go back, listen to the previous 8 episodes. Hit me up and tell me what your favorite part of this season's been. Hit me up with quotables. Let me know how you're feeling, if you're feeling it. If you're not feeling it at all, tell me. I want to know. Got one more episode to go, released on Christmas Eve. Enjoy.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.